This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 288 for Wednesday, September 26th, 2018. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me today is Miss Megan Townsend. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going?
It's fantastic. It's I'm going to break the rules. It's a rainy day, and I'm happy that it's a rainy day. I always get more done. I've been doing a lot of hiking lately, and whenever it's sunny, I always am just drifting into websites of like, where could I hike in the next couple of days since it's so sunny? And I get distracted, yeah. And I end up going down a rabbit hole, and then yeah. and I never come back. But when it's rainy, it's like, bah, whatever. I don't care about what's happening outside. The glow of my computer monitor is a happy place when it's raining outside.
Definitely. As soon as it's raining, I'm just like, yes, that means I can just stay home and write.
Yeah, it's exactly. Good. And we have a few changes to announce at the top of the show. Normally, I just go right into the spiel of saying that you can find Megan at Nerdasmic, but you changed your social media handle.
I have. I'm that person who's done that thing. Now you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube at Megan Townsend, just the letter O, my first and last name. Just went through a little bit of a rebrand. So.
And I think it's important when people are trying to do any kind of creative work that they want to be eventually recognized for, that they use their name. If they can. Sometimes, you know, John Smith is going to have a real hard time. You know, getting that kind of stuff out there. But I feel like, if you can at least, if it's possible to get something really close to your name, then you should at least try. I know for a fact that when I reach out to artists for Comics Coast to Coast and I find it either challenging to figure out what their name is, or I can't find their email address or a official way to contact them, it gets really frustrating, mm-hmm. you know, when you're dealing with, you know, artists that are behind handles and stuff like that. Not that it isn't. It's not something I necessarily frown upon. Actually, last week with Todreal, we were talking about that. I mean, she uses an alias online for personal safety and privacy, and that's fine.
Well,
you know,
course.
And that's totally cool. But I'm like, sometimes when you're wanting to do, I guess, more recognizable work, or if something takes off, you kind of want your name attached to it. And I feel like knowing that you're doing some creative stuff, and I've always just, I guess, been not necessarily ahead of the curve, but like I was able to get Joel Duggan on Twitter. I was able to get it across most places. I think the only place that I came up short was Flickr, because there's a Joel Duggan that's a professional photographer in the States. And back when websites social media was taking off.
Who uses Flickr anymore, though?
Well, that's the thing, right? So, I mean, this is when social media was really taking off. Twitter was a new thing. And I was listening to podcasts about tech, and I thought, you know, like, I'm just going to go snag my name places. And actually, namecheck.com, it's namechk.com, is an excellent resource for anybody that has a new project or is looking to get into social media and stuff, because you can do a search for whatever handle you want to use, and it searches across like almost all known social media. It searches .com, .ca, .uk, like it gives you all of those options and tells you where that particular domain is taken, not taken, etc. And that is why the Spawn Chunks is, it was one of the names that we tossed around for the Minecraft podcast that I do, but because it was available as a .com, as Twitter, Instagram, you like all that kind of stuff. We were just like, sweet, let's just take it. Like that.
Amazing.
That influenced the name of the show, because that way, when you're going to look for the show on you know, Google or trying to find the website, you don't have to remember like, you know, is there an underscore between the words or not, or the hyphens? Like, you don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. You just type in the name, and even though you've got like an O in front of your name on social media, being able to type in Megan Townsend into Twitter as a search is more likely to come up and find you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I was just saying before the show, I actually, that used to be my Twitter handle, was just my name without the O, just Megan Townsend.
Yep.
And then when I was going through the branding, I guess, quote unquote, for Nerdasmic, I changed everything over to that. And then I always loved it, but it never felt like it fit. Really? Mm-hmm. I think it's the one I've used for the longest amount of time, but it never really felt stable, I guess. Not as stable as my own real life name. When I recently went to go change it back to my name, lo and behold, there's another Megan Townsend out there in the world. And this is the first person with the same name as me that I've ever heard of. I mean, there's two, I guess there's two now. So there's the one who has the Megan Townsend Twitter handle. There's another one with a number at the end of her name. And then now there's me with the O. But yeah, it's weird because usually I've been pretty lucky in the sense, just because my last name is such a weird spelling,
right.
That it's usually pretty, even though it's like a common English last name, but the spelling is so uncommon, it's really easy to get handles in that sense.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's weird. It's weird not being able to have my own name as Twitter, but that's why I was throwing in my my middle initial, but it just didn't look right ever. Like, it just didn't look.
Yeah.
And it always feels really chunky.
I've had to put my middle initial in my Gmail address for people that want to contact me. I mean, thankfully these days, a lot of times it's just clicking a link, you know, and I deal with whatever spam I get because that makes it easier for clients to contact me to just click the email link on my website and just, I get the email. It's fine.
Right.
But for the longest time, you know, especially when I'm dealing with payments, I will still remind people when I put it and type it out in an email to someone to say, hey, send the PayPal address to this Gmail. I also put a little bracket note like, hey, FYI, note the middle initial in there. Because if you just send the money to Joel Duggan at Gmail, then it'll go to the wrong spot.
Right.
You know,
right.
So a fun tip for Gmail, though, and I didn't know this until I was looking into it, and that is you can put dots in between letters in your Gmail address, and it doesn't matter. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So you can, and what happens is, like, when you see that visually on a screen, it makes it stand out. The middle initial is very obvious because there's a period on either side of it, but it still goes to the right address, which I thought was really, really clever thing to do. Mm-hmm. Limits, I guess, probably the amount of variations on official emails that people can do, right? You know, because you have some people that mocking celebrity emails, and it would be, it would be a real, real pain. But anyway, for people that are wondering, it's Townsend to spell Townsend.
Yes, you got it.
And now
all of those letters are necessary.
Yeah. Now, if people are following you at Nerdasmic, do they have to refollow you, or has it just been a rename?
It's already been renamed. Okay. Yeah, it's sweet. Already there. It's all just a same accounts, just username switch.
Right.
That's it.
Cool. I like that you can do that, and it doesn't have to.
Yes, me too. Oh my god. I know there's some places that only let you do it for, like, you can only change your username a certain number of times.
Yes.
And Twitter's like, are you sure? Again, really? Like, it does. It's like, you've done this already X number of times, or at least it used to anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know if it, I didn't check it the last time I did it, but some, I know, like, DeviantArt back in the day, you could only change your username the one time.
Yep.
And if you did, it's like, that was it. You got to be real sure. So, yeah.
One, I think, because especially when you're dealing with such a young audience on DeviantArt, for a generalization,
it's true.
People that are changing their handles like they change their moods, I can understand that. Minecraft is another thing where you can change your handle quite often, I think.
Oh, can you?
You have to go through the hoops, but, like, you still have to, like, you know, authentication and all that kind of stuff because it's a paid account. Mm. And in some versions of the game, there's also the Microsoft Store or the Marketplace, the Minecraft Marketplace. So you can buy maps and things like that. And that's tied to an account, which is tied to potential money or credit cards. So, like, you've got to be careful that way. I know some people that play with their kids. I have to ask sometimes what the handles are for the kids because I never know. It changes from point to point. But speaking of kids, one of the things that we wanted to talk about this week is Next Gen, which is a film from Netflix. It's an animated film. And I think we're just going to give it a hot mention because you and I were talking pre-show, and we also watched The Dragon Prince, which is a full series. It's a nine-episode series. I think that's going to take up the bulk of the show. So I think I will get to Next Gen. I am in a position now where it's been several weeks since Next Gen came out, and I didn't take any notes at the time. So I'd have to go refresh my memory, I think. But I will say I really enjoyed it. I really think that people should go and watch it. It's something different from Netflix.
Yes.
It's extremely high quality for an animated film. It's not what we would, you know, refer to as, like, direct to DVD.
No.
Could have been in theaters very easily.
Very, very, very easily. I haven't finished the movie yet, but because I watch things in chunks. I love it. It's really great. I was concerned it would be really, really similar to Big Hero 6.
Yes.
And it's like the same sort of environment, but it is very, very different. Like the emotional stakes that a lot of the characters go through is very, very different. And it's very, I'm sure a lot of people have gone through a similar situation as the main character, whose name is May, which confuses me because her spelling is MAI, and I would read that as my, but it is May. And we discussed that when we talked about the trailer like a couple shows ago. But yeah, no, she's it's nice to see a lead female character who's not like she's a crazy tomboy and she's fantastic. I so far I love everything that I've seen about it so far. I'm really into it.
And I would say that it's not as safe as most films from, say, DreamWorks
No,
or
it's
Disney.
not safe at all, which is really nice to see. It took a lot of risks. It really did.
I don't remember the rating on it, but it's not something I would necessarily watch with really young kids. It's PG, not G. I
It's
think that was
PG, yeah.
the thing that one of the notes I took away from it is that it's I would say kind of like a 10 to 12-year-old sort of situation, not like Disney princess age necessarily,
Yeah,
you
like
know?
it can get pretty dark. I mean, I think some
Yes.
subject matter is pretty dark, and also, guns and what have
Well,
you.
there's a lot of I mean, it's sci-fi robot cartoon violence, but it's still violence. There's a lot
Yes,
of guns and
yes.
explosions, and it's not like, I mean, it's funny how Star Wars has got a lot of fighting and stuff like that in it, but there's just something about lasers and laser swords that is just not as visceral as bullets and explosions. You know what I mean? Like, I get that it's all still real violence and real risk and death in Star Wars, but for whatever reason, it just plays off as, well, it's not so close to the real world, I guess,
Yeah.
is the main
Yeah, it
takeaway.
doesn't. It's Wolf in a Galaxy Far, Far Away, so you
Yeah,
know.
exactly. So check out Next Gen on Netflix. I think it's highly worth it. I hope to get to talk about it on the show at some point in the future. But for now, we'll just kind of leave it there. But The Dragon Prince is also on Netflix. It's also animated, also a Netflix original production. And I have to say, I highly recommend it as well. I really, really enjoyed this series.
Me too. Oh, definitely. It's nice to see a really high fantasy show be so well received on Netflix. It gives me hope for my own project, as selfish as that probably sounds. No, it's nice because like fantasy, high fantasy especially, is so. I feel like it was sort of like shoved aside as like, oh, it's fake literature. It's fake. It's only the stuff that certain people are interested in, right? And it does have very like D&D levels of interest to it. So I know people who are interested in D&D would probably be really into this. I know people who are into Lord of the Rings or like any sort of high fantasy would be into this. Excuse me. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think it looks beautiful. The animation style is really interesting. I like this kind of like cel-shaded anime 3D style that's coming out of a lot of projects now. It's really refreshing. It's a really different take
It is really
on
different.
animation.
And since you brought it up, I will come down and say that I am not a huge fan of CG character cel-shaded stuff, but I have to give, no, it's one of those things. It's the old animator. I was trained in classical animation. Like, I know how to draw 24
That's
frames a
fair.
second, and it's
That's
the old
fair.
man in me saying, "Get off my lawn." Like, you could have done this so much better. But you have to, but you mean there's budgets, there's it's a first show, it's an original show. They don't have an existing property. Like, for example, a really good example of a mix is the new Voltron show from DreamWorks. They use CG for things that make a lot of sense, like the lion. As a classical animator, I would not want to animate a robotic fighting lion ever. That would
No,
be
no.
wholly hard, right? But all the characters in Voltron are classically animated. And in a very anime kind of economic way. And I mean that in that there's a lot of held cells. If a character's not moving or talking, they tend to stand very still and stuff like that. And Voltron, even though the story wasn't something that latched into me, I still appreciated the look of the show. And that is the kind of thing where I was hoping, and I even thought that Dr the Dragon Prince was going to go that way. But once I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, I don't know, the dragon did, like, it's all CG stuff. And so I know it's possible, but I also know that DreamWorks is going to have a lot more money to pump into something like Voltron, an established IP that's going to have nostalgia and bring a lot more people into the show just on the name alone, right? And it's not like the Dragon Prince doesn't have some history. It's produced by Wonderstorm, which is a new animation studio based out of Los Angeles, and it's helmed by a bunch of video game veterans that are now moving into, like, multimedia video game and television entertainment. And I don't know, I tried to look it up. I think his last name is pronounced Ease. It's Ehasz. Aaron Ease is one of the founders of Wonderstorm, Dragon Prince showrunner. Previously, he was the head writer and co-executive producer on Avatar: The Last Airbender. So, for people that enjoy American-style anime, high fantasy, as you mentioned, imaginative, unique takes on fantasy, as in The Last Airbender, which is probably renowned as one of the best cartoons in the last decade.
Yeah, still one of my favorites to this day. I have no problem going back and rewatching it
Is
a thousand
exactly.
times over. So,
And
so good.
this show has a lot of heavily influenced Airbender stuff. It's different enough that you don't go, oh, that's the same as Airbender, but
Yes.
it's similar enough where you feel safe in knowing where it's going. Like, okay, yeah, I understand. Like, I get where this is going, but I also remember that Airbender had a lot of unique stuff that I did not see coming. And this show, I feel like, sets you up with that kind of mood. So if you've not seen Airbender, then I think that The Dragon Prince is very accessible. If you have, it doesn't hinder your, I guess, suspension of
Your
disbelief going,
experience,
yeah,
yeah.
you don't go into it thinking, you don't go into it comparing it to Avatar. You go into it remembering how much you liked Avatar and thinking, oh, this is going to be good. Like, it just
Yeah.
brings it forward, in the best ways. Actually,
Yes.
one of the articles that I found when I was doing a little bit of research before the show, it's called The Dragon Prince is Influenced by Avatar: The Last Airbender in the Best Ways. It's from The Verge. I'll have the link in the show notes. And one of the quotes that I really thought nailed it from this article is that the new show's myth building is masterful. The Dragon Prince offers viewers a rich and suggestive world that's teeming with possibilities about what might be happening beyond the frame. And like, they
I would
nailed
agree.
it. That's exactly what it is. Like, you're watching what's happening on screen, but your brain is also thinking, like, yeah, but what about that thing that they mentioned, like, just for 2 seconds in this one episode, and then they never touch on it again. And but you know from even just the setup that it's chapter one or book one, and then the book has got chapters. So there's 9 chapters or episodes in book one. And right away you think, okay, well, there's probably going to be more than one book, there multiple chapters. So you start to think outside of the show just from the way that it's set up. And I think that really kind of helps. But I skipped ahead. I skipped past what we were talking about with the animation. Wonderstorm has gone out and mentioned that there was a specific technique that they were using when doing the animation. And
Oh,
this is,
really?
yeah, and this is where I normally, and I'll confess to, going in with this attitude to Dragon Prince, I shut off when I watch cel-shaded CG stuff because they normally don't treat it any different. They just do CG stuff because it's easier and quote unquote cheaper. I don't necessarily know how cheap it is compared to 2D stuff anymore. But essentially, you've got a CG puppet similar to something like Pixar or DreamWorks or whatever that you can then move this and pose this puppet around. And you can do some amazing stuff in CG. Next Gen, what we just mentioned, it's all CG and it's beautiful. But what they've done with the cel shaded look, which is to create a black line that goes around the edge of everything, even though it's a 3D model, is they've taken the animation and they've treated the animation very similar to either stop motion, similar to like Coraline or the Box Trolls, or a classical anime animation specifically, where things are held on 2s and 4s. So for anybody that's not in the know, you've got 24 frames a second in film or 30 frames a second in digital animation. And you can get away with animating not 30 frames a second, but about 15 frames a second. So when a drawing or a pose is held for 2 frames, your brain really doesn't see much in between. And what that allows you to do is if you do have something that's really slow and really smooth, you can animate that on ones, and then it looks really cool. An excellent example would be, say, like the flowing hair from Pocahontas, you know, or Ariel, you know. I mean, these are feature films, but you get the idea. Is like the hair flowing underwater would not look good on twos. That would have to be animated on ones. But something like the chase in the kitchen in A Little Mermaid, when the French chef is chasing Sebastian around, like that would be very quick and easily animated on twos or even, you know, quicker poses, because it creates that much more speed and stuff, and your eye's not going to notice. So they're doing that on purpose. So CG animation is something where you can actually tell the computer, okay, I'm going to move from this pose to this pose, and the computer does all the work in between. And that's where my eye sees CG shows and says, ugh, like you really didn't put in any effort into this. You did a couple of poses and you told the computer, you know, move the character in between.
Right.
It's cool when it's done right, but it takes a lot of time, just like anything else.
Yeah.
What they've done here is they've taken the animation and the posing of the characters, and they've treated it like it's a cell animated show. So there's pose to pose, things will pop, things will hold, and it really kind of harkens back to classical animation. So it's not that they've not forgotten where the influence has come from, and they get a lot of brownie points for me from the effort put into it. I still get pulled out of it. I can still see that it's cell animation, but I'm also an artist and a former animator. Like the average person is just going to look at this and realize it looks cool, but not necessarily know why, but know that they've put this intention behind it. And there's a link from that Verge article that actually takes you to a Twitter feed from one of the animators on the show. And they go and they say, like, we animated on twos and some places threes. And there are incredible places where it works. The show is full of action. There's lots of fights and magic and running around and jumping. And it works wonderfully. You don't look at it and look, ooh, that looks like a really smooth CG animation. It looks intentional. It looks dramatic. Where it breaks down for me is when you've got something subtle, like a close-up of a person's face, and the modeling and cel-shaded stuff, I find you lose contrast. So eyelids, noses, they disappear a little bit. The subtleties of a character's mouth, which is normally a drawn line, is often in shadow. Or in a full CG character, light and shadow would render the lips and the teeth and all that kind of stuff. But in this, they're relying on lines. And sometimes lines aren't drawn where they're supposed to be. I'd have to go back and watch. But I think the show actually gets better, both from an animation standpoint and a cel-shaded texture standpoint, as the show progresses. I feel like during the process of making it, they were noticing some things that they wanted to improve on. So I'm really looking forward to a second season.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I one thing I noticed that seemed kind of weird, and I guess, I don't know, I guess because I'm so into Rooster Teeth, and that's, you know, I think a staple style that Rooster Teeth has established for all their works. I think I'm a little bit more forgiving about it. And, you know, especially when you go back and watch the first few seasons of Ruby, it's clunky. It's like the animation is not smooth, but at the time, it was really innovative. So it was really, really unique to watch. And I still enjoy watching it. I enjoy seeing how far it's come.
And these are all,
I still enjoy watching it.
And these are all businesses. They all have budgets. They probably have lower budgets in the first season and see how it does. Yeah. And then they have more, you know, more in the second season. And that's fine. Like, I from being in animation professionally, I understand it. Like, I get that there are things that you'd want to do, but there's deadlines and air dates, and you have to push it out the door, and you make it as good as you can. And I think everything else about the show, the story, the character development, the world building that we mentioned, it was enough where I stopped noticing, unless it was really obvious. You know, it was the things that I had problems with, I always had problems with. But the other things that I was noticing early on, where I was like, oh, huh, that's how they did that, I stopped noticing. I stopped caring about how a character was animated, and I started caring about how a character was feeling and what they were doing. So, like, they really pull you into the world in a lot of ways that surpasses the style. But I like that they put in the effort. Like, that to me just goes down the line. Like, if you go back and you watch the original Toy Story and you look at the human characters in that, it's like watching creepy dolls. Like, it is not.
It is.
Not what you have now. No, it's not what we have now with Incredibles and Next Gen and that kind of stuff. It's, the technology was there to just maybe do it, but really it was better at doing hard plastic toys. So that's what they did. And not to, you know, diminish Toy Story and its landmark, you know, as a film, but this is the first time that I've seen the combination of self-shaded CG characters with pose to pose and animation that's on twos that's intentionally meant to look like classical. It's only going to get better from here.
Yeah.
Right? No, and they did a damn good job. Like, I'm not saying that it's bad. I'm just saying it's different. And if you've got an eye for it, you're going to notice the difference, but it's take it in stride and just know that I think it's going to get a lot better.
Yeah. It is, to me, it's very appealing. It's a very appealing sort of animation style. Just, again, I mean, not being an animator and not knowing the intricacies of how to do animation, it definitely has a different feel from CG. Like, it definitely had that same sort of fluidity that Avatar The Last Airbender did, even though that was all traditional animation, with the style of the self-shading 3D animation, which I liked. I kind of liked that blend.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I found that was kind of off, though, is that I find, like, the mouth movements seem to be almost a step behind the characters' voices, and I'm not sure if that's just my Netflix not rendering quite right,
thing. That's okay. A bottleneck. But, I mean, that's something that I notice and drives me crazy about watching anime in general, unless it's an American produced anime like Avatar The Last Airbender. Their lip sync was a little bit better because they're lip syncing English as opposed to putting English dubs over anime. Because anime, often the mouths just pop open shut, open shut, open shut.
Yeah,
open
it's shut. The flaps.
There's no real dialogue in it. From what I can tell, and some of the things that I've seen on Twitter in some conversations, is the criticism of the cell shaded does come in hard on the lip sync. Like, there's some points where they've held cells on the lips too long, where a character's mouth isn't moving at all. And that's the kind of thing where I think they could slow down and they could animate that a little bit better. CG mouths in TV shows have never been great. It's never been something that's really, really well done. I think one of the shows that I will say I haven't noticed, which is usually a good sign, is the Trollhunters from DreamWorks. I feel like that TV show, they have pretty good character mouth shapes, and it feels pretty fluid in terms of a character speaking and the mouth moving in the way that it's supposed to. Specifically the human characters, trolls, when you get something that's imaginary and you as a person don't see it every day, like, I don't know what a troll's mouth looks like, so however he talks, it's just going to look fine to me. But when you're looking at a small human boy talking, and you see mouths move all the time when you're out in the world, so you get really critical of stuff that you see all the time without knowing it. And like, you're more critical of that kind of thing. But you're right. The mouth shapes do kind of pop from place to place. The lip sync is a little bit weird. But I feel like it's something that is also character based. So I feel like the main characters are better. We see those characters more often. And that could be something as simple as having a more seasoned animator on the main characters. It could also be something completely technical, as in just screen time. These guys are on the show more, so they've got a better rig, you know, a better animation control rig, so that when you get the secondary character where you're like, wow, that guy's mouth was really off, he's in one scene. So, like, it really, you kind of have to take that kind of stuff in stride. But I think that, again, it's probably going to get better. There's certainly been a lot of open criticism about it, both lovers and haters. It's very divisive, which is too bad. But, I mean, that's the internet these days. But I think that they'll probably listen. And you know, if the show, as long as the show continues to get views and is something that brings in, you know, subscribers for Netflix, then they'll have a bigger budget next time and they'll probably have more time and all that kind of stuff. I hope it's one of the few situations, because I want to ask you about Story, but it's one of the few situations in the last long while where I've been like, really? There's no more? I want there to be more than 9.
Yeah. And I mean, I knew there was 9, but when I got to the end, I was like, oh, that seems like a odd place to finish off.
And I mean, go back through the Siddle Cafe. I will constantly tell you, I don't want 26 episodes. I want 13 or 10 or something more concise. And that's precisely what they gave us. And now I'm just like, damn it. Like, I want more. And I don't know whether it's because they're 22 minutes and not 40. Like, you know, it's not 9 hours. It's really 4.5 hours of entertainment. Like, if you're not careful, you can watch it in an afternoon. I split it up over 3 days. I watched like three at a time, and then did it in chunks like that. But
I did too. I watched the first episode separately and then like did it in two separate chunks.
Yeah, it's very easy to just keep on watching, right?
It is.
So how did you feel about the story?
I really liked it. I thought it was, it's a callback to really, really traditional and high fantasy plot points. You know, you get dragons, elves, you know, humans, whatever. Discord between the two factions of people. So I think there's a little bit of World of Warcraft influence in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm thinking about it. But no, it was good. It was really cute. The characters were all super, super well thought out. I really, really love the design of the elves, the moon elves in particular, because they remind me of tieflings a little bit from World of Warcraft with their horns and their slightly bluish, purpley skin and their white hair. I think it's a combination of things because it reminds me of the night elves from WoW, but also the tieflings with the horns.
Are tieflings a World of Warcraft character?
No, tieflings are D&D character, but the Night Elves, are from WoW.
Yes, okay.
But the Night Elves are known to have like very, very blue skin, but they have the option of the white hair, which I think is really, really, I mean, you can have all these other color options as well, but the white hair I find is the most striking on the Night Elves. So I like how they almost like the entire race of Moon Elves all have this white, the stark white hair.
Yeah.
But the little horns and like all the different shapes and like slopes of the horns that you can get on the characters remind me very, very much of tieflings from D&D, and I love tieflings a lot. I think they're fantastic. So it's interesting to see elves that look very, very almost wild, like they're very wild looking as opposed to like very ethereal and graceful like you would see from like a normal Tolkien sort of standpoint. Like they're they're very interesting to watch. And I like the factoid of only having four fingers. I think that is a really cool design element. And I didn't notice at first. There's a particular moment where Rayla, a resident moon elf or moon shadow elf character, comments about like, you know, someone has her weapon. She's like, oh, be careful with that. You might lose a finger. And she wiggles her four fingers. And I was like, oh, that's a really cool way of calling out that little detail.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting how that's like a racial trait. So it definitely makes them feel not human.
Exactly.
Before it's like, you know, all the other elves you see, it's like, oh, they look like humans, but they have pointy ears and obviously they're an elf. So like there's an actual different like, you know, physical makeup of this other race, which is really cool. And I like how the accents seem a bit more, if I'm going to go through like, you know, fantasy tropes, I like how the accents of the Moonshadow Elves are usually what you would hear coming out of dwarves. They're all very Scottish and very guttural in like the way they say things, which is really unique for elves, I think. I think so that kind of, it's taking the elf's trope and sort of mashing it together with a bunch of different things. And I really, really like it. Their design is really excellent and really spot on.
I was discussing with some people in the spoiler section of our Discord way back when, like, we were all watching the first episodes, and we had some criticism about the Scottish accent. Not that we didn't like the idea. No, it was more about the execution. It was more about like, oh, that feels like a North American approximation of a Scottish accent, but from some characters. The actor that does the voice for Rayla. I was going to say Nala, Rayla. But that's, Nala is the dog from Legend of Korra. My brain is all Avatar.
Naga.
Is it
Naga? Naga is the dog. Yeah, it's Naga.
Oh, is it? Okay. Because the Naga is also like a race of sea creatures from World of Warcraft. Like, there's so many fantasy things that cross over here. Paula Burrows is the name of the actor that does Rayla.
Yes. Apparently she's Canadian, isn't she?
She's Canadian, but has Scottish heritage. So she probably she's probably been around a Scottish accent. And some of it is just like, I boiled it down to, it sounds Scottish. It's not something that really takes me out of it, but they don't use any Scottish slang. So she'll say you, where a Scottish person might say something like yeah, you know? And little teeny touches like that make you kind of like, well, this is obviously an American actor doing a Scottish accent. But it, like, again, it's one of those things that you notice in like episode 1, 2, which in episode 1, even though it's a full Netflix series, still feels very pilot-y.
Yes.
So
yeah.
As with most Netflix shows, I'd say give yourself 3 episodes and you'll be hooked. Don't just go in for one. Go in and watch 3. Give yourself the 90.
That's always my rule. Yeah. Watch my first 3 episodes, and if I'm not hooked by episode 3, then I usually write off for me.
Yeah.
So my rule is always 3. So, but yeah, it's worth it for this one, definitely.
Yeah.
I feel like the story is really, really well set up, even by episode 1. Really, like you get the idea of what's going on after the first episode, but it really drives it home on what the whole point of this series is, or what the whole point of this season is, by episode 3. But you're like, yeah, okay, I know exactly what I'm in for at this point. I mean, yeah, for the most part, like there are some like surprising narrative twists along the way, you know, every once in a while, but like, you know exactly what, you know, the goal is by the end of season,
I agree,
or the end of episode 3.
Yeah. And I think that one of the best decisions that they've made, and also something I think they did in Avatar, although maybe less so, this show does not tie up episodes in a nice little bow. It's not like every episode is a cliffhanger, but they really leave it wide open. They really, like, you're not saying like, okay, well, I'll come back to this tomorrow. The question is like, ooh, do I have time to not watch another one? Because you really want to know what happens next. It's not like there's this dun 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 moment where the main character is hanging over a cliff, because you're just like, well, it's the main character and there's 9 more episodes. Obviously, they don't die right now. So like stuff like that is not in there. And what I find so problematic about most animated series that are episodic is that a lot of the episodes, especially in the first season, are usually contained. So as an adult, like they have to do act 1, act 2, act 3 within the 22 minutes. So you watch the first 7 minutes and you know how it's going to end, because they've told you 6 times in the first 7 minutes what the important thing is that they have to accomplish and when they have to accomplish it by. So you know how the rest of the episode is going to, you know, pan out, unless you're looking at the title on Netflix and it's called, you know, The Thunder God Part 1 and The Thunder God Part 2, then you know it's going to be at least a longer story. But with this, they just kind of like, they hit story beats, they set something up in like say episode 2 and 3 that's important in episode 5 and 6. Like they really kind of push you along. Like there's a sequence early on where the Moonshadow Elves do some sort of magic ritual where they have bands that are around their arms.
Yeah.
And I guess this is kind of a spoiler, but It's something that is meant to bind them to their duty. They're supposed to be assassinating the king, and this is that's a plot point in the first 5 minutes. Like that's not a big secret. But these things that are tied around each of your arms, if you don't kill your quarry, they get tighter and tighter until your hand falls off.
Mm-hmm.
They don't tell you that. You're watching this character's hand, and there's a couple characters that have to deal with this in the show, and their arm or their hand is gradually getting more and more purple as the episodes progress. It happens for 2 or 3 episodes in a row before they explain why.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I loved that. I was like, thank goodness they're not beating me over the head. This character is not by themselves talking to themselves, explaining to me, the audience, what's going on. Like you have to wonder about it for a little bit first. And even if there's something where the character fidgets with it, like I think Rayla even messes with it a little bit and says like, you know, like this is uncomfortable, but she doesn't go past that. It's not until the next time where she's trying to cut it off, where she's getting annoyed. But you don't necessarily even know at that point that it's causing her pain. She just feels fed up with it, right? Like it doesn't, you don't know the importance of it. I love that subtlety.
The other subtlety that I really enjoyed was the fact that like, I was thinking like, oh, it's some sort of curse. Like she's being poisoned by it or something.
Right.
But I like how it wasn't like a magical thing. It's like, nah, it's just going to cut off your circulation until your hand falls off. It seems so barbaric in a sense. Like you'd almost expect from elves to be like, oh no, it's gonna curse you and you're gonna die a slow and painful death. It's like, no, I'll just use a hand. Like it just seems like such a simple thing, but it's also a really important thing for an assassin to have both of their hands. I don't know, I thought it was a really nice twist on like being bound to something but not, you know, like having a negative outcome but not having it be like this big magical elven thing. It was just, you know, a physical maiming. I don't know. It's just sort of neat, a neat little difference from what you would expect.
And another reason why it's a PG show. Like, it just, it's that kind of, it not, they don't really ever show anything like that in terms of like the actual end result, but it's a situation where characters die. There's an assassination, you know, attempt in the first few episodes. Like, they're there to kill someone, and they don't beat around the bush about talking about that, about death, about are you willing to die? What are you willing to do to protect yourself or others? And stuff like that, I think, is it just adds that little bit of extra maturity to the show without going gruesome. You know, it doesn't go full on like blood and guts violent, but it just, it has the implication of real danger. And I think, and what that does in other situations is that when you have characters that are doing something that is risky, later on, again, there's a certain amount of security in the fact like, well, this is a main character. They're probably not going to die in the first, you know, 6 or 8 episodes, but there's also that doesn't necessarily mean they can't get hurt.
Yes.
Yeah. Like it means that like, and so like in that situation, I'm making this up. This isn't part of the show, but a character that you really, really like could be injured and then have basically no speaking roles that could be like in a hospital bed sort of thing for 2 or 3 episodes. So there's a risk of loss there, a loss of entertainment, a loss of connecting with that character if they get injured. So you're hoping that they don't get hurt, even though, you know, there's no probably real danger. It's not like watching Game of Thrones, you know, you know, where the characters are gonna be completely disappeared. But I think that they do an excellent job of kind of harkening back to all the things that you know and like about fantasy, like, you know, good guys, bad guys, darkness, evil, that kind of thing. And then also some surprises. There's quite a few mentions of the fact that the family, the main family, Callum and Ezrin are brothers, but they're stepbrothers.
Yeah.
And so that their dad, King, I don't remember his name, King something other.
I gotta look it up. Hang on a second.
Harrow, King Harrow.
Harrow.
His wife is no longer there. They never tell you why. And she obviously just died. So he's a single dad of 2 kids, one of whom was a son from another father, and then his son with his now late wife. And so it's a complicated family dynamic. There's a lot of kids across the world that can relate to that. They mention quite often, to the point where I was kind of rolling my eyes about the whole stepbrother thing. And because it's called the Dragon Prince and there's this great mystery surrounding the Dragon Prince, I had thought very early on, I was like, well, I kind of think I know where this is going. And I was wrong. So I loved
like that.
I was wrong.
Me too. Me too. I was like, really, really? 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 Are they going to go there? I was a little afraid they were going to go there because it seemed like too much of an obvious thing.
Yeah. And I'm not mentioning specifics on purpose because if people watch this, I want them to experience that on their own. Mm-hmm. And we can go into it maybe in a little bit of a post-show chat. But I just think that they did a good job of lulling you into some sort of comfort with the familiarity of it all, but then throwing you a couple of curveballs just when you weren't expecting it. And you're just like, okay, I get it. I also really like how diverse the cast is.
Yes, me too. I like there's a lot of really interesting character designs. But my favorite character as a side character was Amaya. Amaya?
Oh, yeah.
Amara? Amaya, yeah, their aunt. So the queen's sister, you'd find out, and she is deaf, so she does all of her lines in sign language, and they actually signed out. She has a moment where she's like signing like just her own thing, but no one's translating for her.
Yeah,
which I think is so super special.
Yeah,
it's super super special. And I don't sign myself. I mean, I know a couple signs, but I don't sign fluently. So for people who are hard of hearing, who are watching this show, they would have that little moment just for them, which I think is really, really nice. I think that it's fantastic. And I really, really hope I get to see more of Amaya in future seasons because she's, you know, despite the fact that she has a disability, she's badass as fuck. She's so cool. She's so cool. And I want to see more of her.
She can kick the snot out of anybody.
Yeah.
She's kind of like, she looks like she's the captain of the guard. I think they call her a general at some point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, General Maya. Yeah.
General Maya. She, like, man, she won full armor, full plate armor, collar to ankles, and there's no boobs in the armor.
Like, there's no boobs in the armor. Like,
love
there's
it.
No boobs love it. In the armor. Like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, yes, this is.
Yeah.
Amaya is like the pinnacle of everything I've ever wanted in a badass fighting character.
Yeah. Even has a unique fighting style. She's built. She's not skinny. She uses.
No.
She reminds me of a paladin. She has this big shield that has basically blades on the bottom of it, or at least it's pointy. So she's got this ability to. She's not gracefully flipping around and trying to, you know, cut you or slice you. She's beating you with a blunt object. You know?
Yeah.
And it does.
And
have,
she's not afraid to do it. It's great.
It's fantastic. I think, is it her and Rayla that have a fight?
They do, yeah. So, and it's really nice to see the different fighting styles and how they did a lot of detail in like movement and physicalities of the characters.
Yeah.
One thing, in some instances, I felt like the characters didn't have a lot of weight on the ground, and I noticed that more so in future episodes. But in this scene in particular, like, you could tell they put a lot of effort into the scene where Rayla, who is an assassin, she's light on her feet, she's bouncy, she's, you know, she's able to kind of blend in and be really quick and quiet, versus Amaya, who is like solid. She's like the Toph of fighters, essentially.
Yeah.
She's like an earthbender. She's grounded and everything. Whereas, you know, Rayla is probably more of like an airbender, where she's very fluid and
she's
and
your
flippy.
Tank. Amaya is your tank character.
Exactly.
And she's the one that sits at the front of the column. Yeah.
Exactly. And you can see how, you know, each character would have, you know, pros and cons to their fighting style as soon as they're pitted against each other. Like, you can see, you know, where people's strengths lie and how each of those things can be used to intercept the other type of fighter. And it's really, it's like watching a D&D fight in real time.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it's so satisfying. That I think that is my favorite scene in the entirety of the show. I really liked that scene a lot.
And something that's really subtle about that kind of stuff is that when she's speaking to the characters for the benefit of the audience, and perhaps some of the other characters that maybe don't speak sign language, she has an interpreter. She's got like a left hand that follows her around, a guy, which is, again, a unique thing. So when he speaks, Amaya speaks with a man's voice.
Yes.
As far as audio goes, right?
Yeah.
And
I kind of liked it.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Because it's just another neat juxtaposition, right? Like, they're messing with your norms a little bit. But when she fights, there's nothing. She's not, I don't even remember her grunting. Like, she just points at you and does the whole Morbius thing from the Matrix and kind of just motions you, like, come on, like, try it.
Come at me, bro. You know? Yeah.
And that's it. Like, that's all she does, because her hands are busy beating the crap out of you, so she can't say anything. And like, I love it. It's got this stoic silence to it that I really enjoy.
And
she's not a cookie cutter of other similar kind of, like, you know, lopsided haircut, we'll say, formative female characters that you see in video games and stuff a lot these days. She's something completely unique. She definitely fits that type, but she's not a copy of something from like Overwatch or stuff like that.
And she's affectionate too, which is nice. Like, the very first thing which she does when she sees the kids is she's like, come here, like, give me a hug. Like, and she's very maternal.
Yes.
You know, despite not being their mother, but she's very maternal, but she's also like, you know, will cut your head off without a second thought. Which she's very well balanced.
And again,
as a character.
Visually, because of pop culture, you think typecast. And then as the episodes go on, you go, oh, nope, not typecast. I was wrong. And I like that the show makes you aware of the pop culture baggage that you bring in. And in some cases, they wipe it clean.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, not so much. Viren is the lead mage of the kingdom, and he is the villain from the moment he opens his mouth. It's like watching Jafar 20 years later. Like, he's just, they do nothing to hide the fact. And I think it's because I've been watching a lot of Lord of the Rings lately. I started watching, I think I had halfway done the Fellowship, and then I finished it, and then I started the Two Towers on the weekend, and now basically every night I'm watching like an hour and a half of the Lord of the Rings trilogy before I go to bed. I'm on to the final disc of Return of the King now, But one of the things that Viren reminded me of that is done well in Lord of the Rings, but they didn't do very well in this show, is Gollum. Gollum has that split personality, and he really plays Sam and Frodo against one another. And you, the audience, get to see the duplicity of it, but no one else really grasps it, right? Except for Sam. But it's not obvious, you know, to other characters. Mm-hmm. Whereas when Viren opens his mouth, like, you think every other character in his presence must be an absolute idiot not to see that this guy is evil. Like, it really does not make any sense. I wish they had done a better secretive way of keeping him being the bad guy without it just being so obvious from the get-go. And he's even not that smart at times. Like, they've got these evil things that he does and this magic that he uses, this dark magic that he's mastered. And so right away he's got like a purple jewel and a walking stick, and like he feels kind of bad.
He's like colored as a bad guy.
Exactly. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, traditionally fantasy purple is not a good color. Like, no. Generally purple, reds and blacks are generally the bad guys. So like that kind of stuff is quite obvious from the beginning. But he does some stuff where he, you know, tries to usurp the throne or tries to take power, but he does it in such a blatant way where just like, if you're supposed to be the evil mastermind, how on earth did you think this was going to work?
Yeah.
Like, you just, you did not, he jumps the shark. He puts his cards on the table way too early. Whereas, I mean, him revealing his evil plan in like the last minute of the last episode would have been perfect. I would have been totally fine with wondering the entire season who the hell the bad guy is, and then finding out the last minute that it's like their uncle. Like, that would have been cool. But the fact that you get it from like episode 2 is really kind of disappointing. But that's also the show kind of like, well, we have to make sure that the kids that are watching this know who everybody is and stuff like that. I think they maybe wrote some characters a little bit too young.
I agree.
I'm not the target audience. I'm almost 40. Like, the show is aimed at kind of like the preteen, like the 13 to 15 year old, you know, like it's not aimed at me. So I notice that kind of stuff, but I can also take all the other good things and all the other subtleties that we've talked about, and kind of push it in there. We haven't really delved too much into the characters. Were there any characters that kind of like stood out as your favorites?
As my favorites, aside from Amaya, I really like Rayla. I like the dynamic of Rayla being pretty much the only competent fighter in the trio.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see Callum kind of come out of his shell as like a mage, like where he learns more, you know, gets more confident in his magical abilities and things. But I like him as the reluctant hero, but also the kind of blundering hero. He wants to do really well, but he just doesn't have the chops for it. And how Rayla kind of takes charge as like the main fighter of the group. So it's a nice like dynamic shift from what you would see from normal high fantasy situations where you have like an elven damsel who's, you know, like reliant on the human man to take care of her. But so it's a nice switch up.
Yeah. There's an old Dungeons and Dragons cartoon from the 80s, and one of the characters in that is a magician. He's like a reluctant magician. He's like the nerdy kid, and he goes by Presto in the show. And Callum reminds me of that. I think you're gonna get the long character burn with Callum. Like, it's gonna take a couple seasons for Callum to really come into his own. So he's got this really cool, he's got cool moments, but he has all these lovable, soft-spoken things and these unsure, self-conscious kind of fumbles that add a lot of comedy, but also make him really endearing. He's essentially Luke Skywalker from episode 4.
He is. He's like a really good blend of Luke Skywalker and Aang.
Yes. Yeah.
Like one thing about the producers of like between like Avatar and the show is that they make the male characters very emotional.
Yes.
Which is, I'm glad to see that. Like, because oftentimes you see like boys being like, I'm a boy and I have to be tough. And, you know, they definitely really tap into the emotions of these young boy characters. And they really touch on their insecurities and their fears, and it makes them very well-rounded as people. They definitely try and be like macho, like in the beginning, like you get Callum who's like, yeah, I can totally fight. And, you know, he's trying to impress Claudia, and and everything. And even like, you know, Claudia's brother Soren is like, you know, yeah, you know, hit me. I'll pretend to take a fall for you so you can impress her. Which I thought was kind of a cute dynamic. But like as characters, I find Claudia and Soren like they seem kind of useless at this point. I feel like Claudia has more potential than Soren does. Like mm-hmm. Soren's just like, you know, oh, I'm the muscly guy.
I feel and that's like it. Of all the typecasts and all the stereotypes, I feel like Claudia and Soren are definitely pulled from a lot of traditional anime influences, and they're usually the things that I don't like because they're very one-dimensional so far.
And I find a lot of their scenes were added in there like just because, like in the last couple episodes it was more obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But like there was a moment where they're walking like down like, you know, a night path or something, and it like the moment really served nothing to the episode. It was like a fart joke or something, and that was it. And I was like, Really? That was it?
You needed that.
You had to throw that in there.
As lovable and as quirky as I find Claudia, I like.
Yes.
She's got some awesome qualities that kind of make her more interesting because she's a dark mage. She's the daughter of Viren. These are Viren's kids.
Yeah.
That we're talking about, and she's got these endearing, soft moments where she actually has a personality of her own. She's not afraid to joke around, but she can also do mm-hmm. some really cool dark magic spells that are very aggressive. And so you see both sides of her personality. The dialogue for her, even her name actually is a little bit off-putting, but the dialogue for her is very modern. She speaks and almost talks like a meme, and it pulls me out of Zadia, the magical mm-hmm. kingdom that they've kind of created for the Dragon Prince. And it pulls me into, oh, right, I'm watching a TV show. And there are some, it's not necessarily Claudia that makes all of them, but there are other moments in the show where they make some pop culture references that completely pull me out of it. And as you mentioned, don't serve the story.
Yeah.
You pull them out, you remove, there's a Game of Thrones reference that no kid is going to get because no kid is old enough to watch that show. It's even like a Winter Coming joke. I think it might be Viren that makes it. And it completely made me roll my eyes. And it serves nothing other than the writers get to elbow each other in the ribs like, hey, did you see what I slipped into that last episode? Like, it's really cringeworthy. And I hope they don't continue. I like the goofiness, but I think that there's a clever way to write that goofiness into the show. One of my favorite characters is Ezrin. Normally,
yes,
the comic relief.
Adorable.
Normally, the comic relief in these anime cartoons is annoying. Like, normally, it drives me crazy. You know, like, I never really liked the really silly Sokka episodes from Avatar. Like it felt unrealistic to me. It felt like it was talking down. But with Ezrin, he manages to be cute, but not annoying.
Yes.
And there's a nice balance there. And they give him some courage. They give him some important things to do, but he still approaches it like a 10-year-old. Like,
yes.
I think he's 10. I'm not really sure how old he is.
Yeah, 8 or 10 or something. Yeah. He's young. He's a kid.
There's a wiki, and it says that he's 10. So I was right. So yeah. So again, they give you that. There's a sense of play. There's danger. He gets scared, like nighttime shadows and stuff like that. They freak him out, you know, and that's fine. But then he also just likes to steal jelly tarts. And you know, like
but he's also really brave. Like he jumps into, well, I don't know if this is a spoiler or not. Maybe a spoiler. He jumps into a frozen lake at one point.
Yes.
Because, you know, of an important thing. And you know, he's like, no fear. He's like, I got to do it. And he just goes. And, you know, he's a pretty badass little kid. The one thing that kind of bothered me about his maybe not so much Ezrin's plot, but again, one of those moments that things that are added in here as an afterthought just because. Again, I don't know if this is a spoiler. It's revealed that Ezrin can do something at the end of the season. But it's never been mentioned. There's been no hints of it up until that point. It's like, oh, by the way, I can do this thing. But it's never served any purpose before that moment when it was like necessary. And I felt that it was kind of just like, oh, we should just throw that in there just because. And I guess you could write it off as like, oh, is this like a kid thing? Like, you know, is he pretending or is it a legitimate thing? It seemed like it really pulled me out of it in a it was really jarring. I was like, what? Really? Since when? There's no indication that was ever a facet of his character, of his personality, until it was very much like, by the way, here's a thing I can do. And I felt like there was a lot of moments like that in the show. Like despite the story being really, really well structured and really, really good, there were a lot of moments that were just thrown in either for the funny or either just because they couldn't figure out something else. Like, it definitely felt like, oh, what do we put here? Let's put that.
Yeah.
And it works now.
Yeah, I agree. I think also that the weakest episodes are actually the first and the last.
Yes, I agree.
Which is an odd
literally
sandwich.
Everything from episode like 2 to 8 are fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a really weird sandwich. You're
it
right.
Almost feels
it's a
like
really weird sandwich.
It almost feels like there should have been a 10 or like a 10 or an 11. And then they, for whatever reason, decided to move that to book 2. You know, it's an odd place to kind of that, or they did so much episode to episode, you know, arc story building that then when they realize that they have to end it at episode 9 in the first season, they do what I mentioned earlier. They have to tie everything up in a little bow, and it happens so fast that it just feels, it just feels like a, and then this happens, and then this happens, and oh, by the way, I can do this, and we can do that, and you do this, and this is fixed, and that is fixed, and that is fixed. And you're like, well, wait a minute. Like,
yeah.
How does all of these things that have been developing over 8 episodes get tied up in 20 minutes? Like it seems a little too convenient. And I think that might you know, what you're hinting at with Ezrin's ability. And I think you're right. Like it feels just a little bit too on the nose.
Yeah, it does. And like, I think the last like 4 episodes or the last 3 episodes, so definitely the last arc of the season. It felt like it felt like something was missing. And I can't even really place my finger on it, but there is something just sideways about it. And it still fit, but it didn't feel like I was watching the same show at certain points. I was like, is this the same people? Is this the same writer? Like there's just something that was just missing, or like something that was like forgotten, or like some kind of hole that I couldn't quite figure out. And I don't know if it was because things were just kind of like everything was too convenient, and it's like, oh, now we got to just tie everything up in a nice bow, or if there is, you know, something just felt off about the last little tiny section of the end of the season. So I was kind of left feeling like there wasn't any closure, which is sort of odd. Like, even though there was closure at the end of the season, obviously there's a secondary season coming, and like it does have places to go still. Just the resolution of that season, I was like, okay, really? Okay, sure. I guess it didn't feel like it had a natural resolution.
Yeah.
It felt like a very plotted resolution. It felt like very, very structured. And I think that was a little bit of a downfall in terms of narrative storytelling. It felt like, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. Like, it didn't feel like it had a natural, smooth progression of everything. So I think that took me out a little bit.
But. And I kind of wonder if people come into this later where the second book is already available and they can just watch episode 9 and then go right into episode 10, whether they'll notice as much.
Yeah, hoping not.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it resolves itself by the end. But
I mean, like, the show can be a little bit self-referential sometimes, which is fine because they do it in a very clever way. You could almost have them mention something in the next episode of book 2 where they say like, wow, that was a little bit too easy. Like that's a bad sign.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the kind of thing that happens for smaller plot points in the show that immediately make you forgive. Like, you think like, oh, that was kind of lame. And then one of the characters will say, wow, that was really lame. And then you get it. Like, then you get the joke. And I feel like they can, if they handled some stuff like that moving forward, they could probably get away with it. But yeah, I felt the same way.
I mean, like they had that joke about irony. It's like, yeah, this is called irony, where like you think something is going to happen or we think it's not going to happen, but really it does. Like, they do actually call to that at one point, which I thought was really funny. It was like that. Okay, that was good. That was a good little moment in all of the kind of messiness of just, you know, like, yeah, story tropes.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of the end of the season, unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for this week's episode of the Citadel Cafe. I have a funny feeling that Megan and I are going to keep talking about the Dragon Prince, though. So if you are a patron, you might be able to catch a special barista cut of our chat about the Dragon Prince on patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. It's also one of the best ways that you can support the show and keep us going. We are currently sitting at 14 patrons, and we're only a few more days away from October. My goal has always been to add one more patron per month to the show. So if you like the Citadel Cafe, if you'd like to support us, then head on over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. And support the show there. When you do that, you get to join our Discord, and we have a very robust spoiler section that's been pumping lately, where we can talk about stuff that not necessarily everybody else has seen in kind of a cool, safe environment. So once you've watched The Dragon Prince, you can pop in there and we can have some really in-depth conversation about the show. You can visit thecitadelcafe.com, as I mentioned, to listen to the show, find out some notes, links to the articles that I mentioned in the episode today. The music for the show is also composed by Kevin MacLeod. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Let us know what you thought about The Dragon Prince, and find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online at joelduggan.com. If you're interested in hiring me as a designer or an illustrator, then please drop me a line. I am open right now for commissions. I'm going to be heading into HalCon at the end of October, so I'm going to be doing some new art for there. So look for me at HalCon, look for me at joelduggan.com, and look for me this Saturday on Twitch. Minecraft is doing their Minecon Earth watch party. They're going to be streaming some information coming about the new version of Minecraft. Don't know when it's coming, but they're going to be announcing some changes to the game. And Pixel Riffs and myself are going to be covering the stream live. So you can go to twitch.tv/pixelriffs, follow him there. We're going to be doing the stream from his channel. And that is going to be live on Saturday, September 29th at 1 p.m. Eastern. Megan, where can people find you and all the cool stuff that you're doing online?
My main places are Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Again, handle change. So, Megan Townsend. YouTube, I'm still adding some YouTube videos from my trip to China, but I'll be doing some different things coming hopefully in the next, or maybe by next year, we'll say. I'm also have an Instagram for my personal project, The Heir of Keldanan, that can be found on Instagram as well. I'm adding some more, or collecting some more photos to add to that going forward, so people can find out more about the story and the world.
Cool. Thanks for being on the show. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad that we both had watched the Dragon Prince. It's always good to talk about stuff that I've seen with somebody.
Yes.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.